Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryankaravavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Ma Vidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 114. Lord Ramachandra showed his favor to his brothers by ordering them to go out. Many of the Lord's devotees residing in Vrindavan have taken the vow not to leave Vrindavan to preach Krishna consciousness. But the Lord says that Krishna consciousness should be spread all over the world, in every village and every town. This is the open order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prithivite ache jato nagaradi gram sarvatra prachar hoibe mor nam. A pure devotee, therefore, must execute the order of the Lord and must not gratify his senses by remaining stagnant in one place. Falsely proud, thinking that because he does not leave Vrindavan but chants in a solitary place, he has become a great devotee. The devotee must carry out the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Jare Deka Tare Kaha Krishna Upadesh. Chaitanya Charanamrita Madhulila 7.128. Every devotee therefore should spread Krishna consciousness by preaching, asking whoever he meets to accept the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord says, Sarva Dharmam Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja. Bhagavad Gita 18.66. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. This is the order of the Lord, who speaks as the Supreme Emperor. Everyone should be induced to accept his order, for this is victory, Digvijay, and is the duty of the soldier, the devotee, to impress upon everyone this philosophy of life. Right, so we're taking, in this case, the religion of staying in the Dham, you know, as a vow. But Lord Chaitanya said that should be given up for carrying out the order of Lord Chaitanya. That's better. Right. So that's the whole point, is Ramachandra, he ordered his brothers to go out and preach. So that was the principle. Right? Then, yes, so they're doing that. I think, I'm not sure if here, here it is, next. It's the next paragraph. Of course, those who are Kanista Adhikaris do not preach, but the Lord shows mercy to them also, as he did by staying personally in Ayodhya, to give audience to the people in general. One should not mistakenly think that the Lord asks his younger brothers to leave Ayodhya because he especially favored the citizens. The Lord is merciful to everyone, and he knows how to show his favor to each individual person according to his capacity. One who abides by the order of the Lord is a pure devotee. So, for the neophytes, then they were functioning in one way, in the Lord's association. And for the Madhyamas, then they were going out and preaching. Right, so that's the Lord deals with them according to their position. So, Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, during the reign of Lord Ramachandra, the streets of the capital, Ayodhya, were sprinkled with perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor, thrown about by elephants from their trunks. When the citizens saw the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the city in such opulence, they appreciated this opulence very much. Srila Prabhupada comments, we have simply heard about the opulence of Ram Rajya during the reign of Lord Ramachandra. Now here is one example of the opulence of the Lord's kingdom. The streets of Ayodhya were not only cleansed but also sprinkled with perfumed water and drops of perfumed liquor, which were distributed by elephants through their trunks. There was no need of sprinkling machines. Just need elephants, that's all. For the elephant has a natural ability to suck water through his trunk and again throw it out in a shower. So, much nicer. Right?
Just don't make it mad.
Huh?
Just don't make the elephant mad.
Yeah, that's another thing. But that means you choose elephants for the work they can do. So this kind of elephant will be a particular one that will be more peaceful. So you wouldn't bring the war elephants for out for this one. Right? Moreover, the citizens had the opportunity to see the Lord personally supervising the affairs of the state. He was not a sleeping monarch, as we can understand from his activities in sending his brothers to see to affairs outside the capital and punish anyone who did not obey the emperor's orders. This is called Digvijaya. The citizens, so that means the Lord is there. So he's there in the temple. And so then all the devotees go out and preach and see that everyone's following the order of the Lord. Right? So that's the Digvijaya. The citizens were all given facilities for peaceful life. And they were also qualified with appropriate attributes according to Varnashrama. So it wasn't just that they were there, they were basket cases. No, they were able to nicely perform their duties. Right? Just that they weren't going out and, preaching. Never heard basket case?
Yes, no? It's been too long.
It's been too long, okay.
She used those words.
Okay. Without this scientific division, there can be no question of good citizenship. The king, yeah. So without this, there can be no question of good citizenship. So citizenship, that's where your community is. Right? So without the scientific division, you don't get community. That's how it goes. Because what happens is everybody tries to do what everybody else is doing and at the same time criticizing what everybody else is doing. Because if you don't do what you're supposed to do, it will always create trouble. And so, therefore, it'll give rise to more criticism. So, of course, there is the aspect of if you don't scientifically divide society up like that, then naturally it gives rise for more facility for criticism. And so that will be many times much more appreciated. But here, if you want the city to go nicely, the community, then you have to follow the Lord's order and then divide everything up nicely. Then it becomes very clear. Everyone knows who's doing what. And then it makes it very easy. Right?
Yeah. Community means just cooperation between everyone who is under
yes.
the king?
Yes, but what we're meaning is that if you have an area that you focus on, because otherwise if you have where no one really focuses on anything, then that leaves it open, then you can find fault in anybody. But if you're focusing on a particular area, then you're going to try to apply your best to perform that area properly. So any critical attitude, you can apply it into how well you're doing your work. But otherwise, if it's not divided up scientifically, it's all by the mind. And then the mind is the one that likes to find the fault. Right? So therefore, being dissatisfied in that you're not performing duties that are satisfy the conditioned nature, therefore then one's going to become fault finder. Because basically someone who's satisfied is not a fault finder. Does that make sense? We become fault finders because of that. And the less you have to do means the more dissatisfied, then you even take it up as a your occupational position, your duties, yes, that you are to find fault in everyone. You're the one to see that everyone's doing the right thing. The watchdog. I've heard these points being made, in all seriousness. I think, yes.
Nowadays, it's a popular idea of shifting positions constantly, that everybody gets an opportunity to be in a position. So how good is it?
It's just like, let's get 100 people and we'll start baking a cake and, everybody will do 30 seconds worth of making that cake. Then they get to all eat it. So the constantly shifting positions depends. And if it's something that doesn't matter, it's like, who's going to be singing the song in the karaoke bar, then it doesn't matter, right? Because you just know it's going to be bad anyway, so it doesn't matter. It's just a matter of, But if it's a matter of your administration management and that, then the person's in a position and carries that out. That's what makes it good. So if they think, no, but everybody should get a chance to be temple president, go out and open a new temple. You know? That means we have, what, like 600 temples or something like that? You know, I don't think we've covered every city on the planet. And some of the cities, like Delhi, probably wanted 20 temples. So, you know, therefore these big cities, they could handle 20 temples, you know, or even more. You know, 20 was back when Prabhupada was here. So it's even bigger now. So, you know, 20, 30 temples, you know, like that. So that way you do. Because otherwise, if it's all about equality, then where is the consideration about efficiency? Because since the activity we're performing is for pleasing Krishna, and why are we worried about equality? That's for pleasing ourselves. Right? So if it's about Krishna, then we'd be more worried about efficiency. So that's why the Varnashram system is there, is everybody's efficient at something. So find that position and have them do it, and then you become more and more expert at it. But if it's something you can change, like, you know, that doesn't matter. You know, like, like that. But if it takes some skill or something like that, then, one, if they're qualified, then they can take up a position. But the point is why should it keep changing? Does that make sense? Yeah. Unless there's a benefit to the service. But. Okay. The king, being magnanimous and perfect in his duty, performed many sacrifices and treated the citizens as his sons. And the citizens, being trained in the Varnashram system, were obedient and perfectly ordered. The entire monarchy was so opulent and peaceful that the government was even able to sprinkle the street with perfumed water, what to speak of other management. Since the city was sprinkled with perfumed water, we can simply imagine how opulent it was in other respects. So there's a good chance that not even just sprinkled with water, there was probably more than one elephant. Was it that one elephant had to start in the morning and go all the way until evening, you know? You know, and then after the thing go back, someone had to massage his trunk, you know, like that. No, it's just that, you know, there were probably lots of elephants.
But were they spraying the perfume water to cover up the stench of all the garbage on the street?
No, it said it was not only clean, but also sprinkled.
Oh, okay.
Like that. So it was perfectly clean, and then it was sprinkled.
Wow.
Even you go back, I think Sarvabhavana Prabhu was saying that, because he grew up, he and Bhakti Shumars, they grew up in Calcutta, they were friends. So then, he said before he went to Germany for his, you know, university education, they used to clean the streets of Calcutta twice a day with Ganga water. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see all those places in the street where water's coming out of the street and you wonder why? Before, those were hydrants. And so they had that. And so twice a day, the PWD would go down, put hoses on, and wash down the streets twice a day. But he says when he came back, then that had stopped and it was just dirty. But otherwise, that was the standard before, right? So it's not, you know, we haven't seen like this, you know, there's not out, and that wasn't, you know, it's Ganga water, but it wasn't perfumed water, so.
No elephants.
No elephants, yeah. Since the city was sprinkled with perfumed water, we can simply imagine how opulent it was in other respects, right? So if you can manage that, how well managed it is, and if it was opulent in this, how other things are there. So you mentioned something like this, it's a simple thing, but you can understand this would be the last thing put into place, and if that's there, you can imagine what the rest of it was like. Why should the citizens not have felt happy during the reign of Lord Ramachandra? Sukadeva Goswami continued. The palaces, the palace gates, the assembly houses, the platforms for meeting places, the temples, and all such places were decorated with golden water pots and bedecked with various types of flags. Right? You didn't have to worry that by putting all this out there, someone would steal it. You know, because that was just everyone, there was so much opulence, no one needed it. It was just decoration. You know, these are all the public places. Okay. And various types of flags. Yeah. Wherever Lord Ramachandra visited, auspicious welcome gates were constructed with banana trees and betel nut trees, full of flowers and fruits. The gates were decorated with various flags made of colorful cloth and with tapestries, mirrors, and garlands. Wherever Lord Ramachandra visited, the people approached him with paraphernalia of worship and begged the Lord's blessings. Like you see a lot of times these tapestries, they have all that, and then they put mirrors into them. So you see, you don't see it as much now, but previously, then all those Indian tapestries, they all had mirrors in them. You know, they may have been real small, probably before there were either more of them or bigger, but... Wherever Lord Ramachandra visited, the people approached him with paraphernalia of worship and begged the Lord's blessings. O Lord, they said, as you rescued the earth from the bottom of the sea in your incarnation as a boar, may you now maintain it. Thus we beg your blessings. Thereafter, not having seen the Lord for a long time, the citizens, both men and women, being very eager to see him, left their homes and got on the roofs of the palaces, being incompletely satiated with seeing the face of the lotus-eyed Lord Ramachandra. They showered flowers upon him. Thereafter, Lord Ramachandra entered the palace of his forefathers. Within the palace were various treasures and valuable wardrobes. The sitting places on the two sides of the entrance door were made of coral. The yards were surrounded by pillars of Vaidurya Mani. The floor was made of highly polished Marakata Mani, and the foundation was made of marble. The entire palace was decorated with flags and garlands and bedecked with valuable stones shining in the celestial effulgence. So we see this style, this goes way back, where you have the gate, you come in, and then there's two seats on both sides. But you can open the gate, and still those seats are there. They don't get blocked. Then you come in, then there's a courtyard, but the courtyard has pillars. So that means then there's a walkway around. So there's an open part, there's a covered open walkway, and then there's the rooms themselves. And then from there it goes on and on. So it's a standard architectural method. So it's very, very nice. The palace was fully decorated with pearls and surrounded by lamps and incense. The men and women within the palace all resembled demigods and were decorated with various ornaments, which seemed beautiful because of being placed on their bodies. Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, chief of the best learned scholars, resided in that palace with his pleasure potency, Mother Sita, and enjoyed complete peace. Without transgressing the religious principles, Lord Ramachandra, whose lotus feet were worshipped by devotees in meditation, enjoyed with all the paraphernalia of transcendental pleasure for as long as needed. Yeah, so like that, until then they went back to Godhead. So this was the position. So they're all devotees, they're all absorbed in the Lord, therefore they're always worshipping the Lord, interacting with the Lord. So we see is that, you know, it was a great festival. Every day something very special. So this is also then, I think, where the Ramayana ends at this point. This was Sita and Ram, you know, situated in the palace and all that. So this is the natural ending place. Conclusion. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not allow any of his devotees or assistants to be engaged in sense gratification because he knows how to show his favor to each individual person according to his capacity. Right? So whoever they were, the Lord was reciprocating with, interacting with them. But the Lord asked his younger brothers to leave Ayodhya in favor of the citizens. That's the doubt. Lord Ramachandra showed his favor to his brothers by ordering them to go out. The younger brothers of Lord Ramachandra were at home enjoying the personal presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord ordered them to go out and achieve victory all over the world. It was the custom, and this custom in some places is still current, that all other kings would have to accept the supremacy of the emperor. Many of the Lord's devotees residing in Vrindavan have taken the vow not to leave Vrindavan to preach Krishna consciousness. But the Lord says that Krishna consciousness should be spread all over the world. A pure devotee, therefore, must execute the order of the Lord and must not gratify his senses by remaining stagnant in one place, falsely proud. One may say, okay, well, that may be for us, but we have to remember is the Vrindavan devotees, except for maybe the Brajbasis themselves who are born there, you know, in, you know, out in the farms and the villages, they're all Gaudiyas. So Vrindavan is Gaudiya place. So therefore, since Lord Chaitanya gave the order, then why would they be doing otherwise? Right? It's one thing if you can't, you know, or it's an earlier stage, so one's absorbed in one's material life, so then one takes a vrata, okay, I will, you know, give up this material life and just live in Vrindavan, okay, that's a step up. But then the next natural step, one will go and preach. Right? So that's the, you know, then one retires back to there. After preaching, then one retires back to there. Yes.
So in terms of brahmachari, vyasa, vanaprastha, and sannyas, you know, who's preaching actually? Whose duty is it?
It's everyone's duty. All as devotees, then it's everyone's duty. But according to what you can do. Like that. So the brahmacharis, they're being trained, but then after being trained, then if they want to remain, then they can go out. Vanaprasthas will be, you know, can't, will be any. Sannyasis and vanaprasthas, they'll be naturally preaching. Sannyasis will be more traveling. Vanaprasthas may or may not be, because they're also dealing with the community. Then the community preaches then however they can within what they're doing. The point is that that's being made, it's not as much about the traveling aspect as it is about following the Lord's order and trying to distribute Krishna consciousness. So if in one's own place one can preach, then that's fine. The point is one should be trying to benefit others by giving Krishna consciousness. And then if one can travel also, then great. So that was the old, because even the Grihastha's, Prabhupada's idea was this, Grihastha then, he has a program at his house where 10 people come over and they have a regular program. And then with time, those 10 people become trained. So then they'll start having their own programs where they invite 10 people. And in this way, then, you know, a few generations of this, and you have, you can take over the whole city. You know, because if one person is there, he has 10. So that's the first, right? So then the second one, then they each have 10, so you have 100. Then the next one, you'll have 1,000. The next one, you have 10,000. Next one, you have 100,000. Next one, you have 1,000,000. So, you know, how long it takes until they can actually run programs in that? 2 years, 3 years, some less. Some may take a little more, but basically, you know, every so many years. So in 20 years, you could have actually 1,000,000 people. So the idea is that you have your program with your 10 people, and then they have their own program. So everybody's doing two programs a week. One you're going and getting trained, and one you're training others. Yes?
Seems there's a quantum leap from getting people to come to getting people to make a program and make others come.
That's there. But the point is if that's the mood and that's the attitude, then that naturally picks up. I mean, so when we see when Prabhupada was here, the devotees were, after 3 months, 6 months, going and opening temples in places where there was nothing. You know, and they went with no facility. They had the bus ticket, or they just hitchhike and went to wherever they thought. You know, it's like, oh, I was in this place and that seemed to be nice. I think we can make devotees, and then they just go there and set up a temple. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the thing. If that's given in the association, rather than oh no, being community, don't push, don't this, don't that, then you end up with don't nothing. You know. So. Yeah. You know, so like that. So don't want to bother anyone. Don't hit, because as if not bothering people is the ultimate goal. Like that. You know, so because there's no such thing as not bothering anybody. It's just that you exist. You already are a botheration. You know.
There is the Church of Euthanasia.
Huh? Yes. Yes.
The Church of Euthanasia. Save the planet. Kill yourself.
Okay, but then what? They kill themselves, but then somebody has to take care of them. So yeah. Then you know, so it's, you're still an annoyance. Even you kill yourself. Right?
It's actually true.
Yeah.
No, so then you have a pile of ashes. What if it gets out of hand? Burns the furniture, you know, stuff like that. you know, especially if you've got wooden floors. Yeah. Hey, come on, you know. The Vedic thing, you go out and you're in the forest, and so then you disappear out in the forest, and then, you know, 1,000,000 years later, then some funny guys with a little goatee will come along with their little paintbrushes and little shovel, and then find you, and ooh, you know, then, yeah, like that. Yeah.
Maharaj, does it depend on people's nature? Because you can be training people for years and years and years, but then they don't want to, you know, be like independent and start their own.
Then it doesn't matter. You know, then the point is that even if we don't do, that's just ideal. So even if out of your 10, 2 people do, you know, and then they have, then it'll move on. But the point is, you know, so then okay, instead of in you know, 20 years you take over the city, it takes you 40 years. So it's been 40 years.
I just mean she wouldn't just say, like, okay.
No, his point is to engage. I remember, I think it was about devotees were, I can't remember who was doing. I'm not sure if it was Bhavananda or. They started the Krishna Book Club. And it was open for, you know, any youth who wanted to come and learn English. So you had boys a lot coming from, you know, Navadvip, Krishnagar, Sroop Ganj, like this, you know, around. To learn English. So what they would do is they would read Krishna book and then discuss the things, and then I'm not sure how much, you know, they were doing, but you know, they were learning English, you know, so they'd learn, read and this and that, and then they'd take prasad. But then after you know, some time, I'm not sure how long, but it had been running for quite a bit of time, then a doubt came up, is that nobody's becoming a devotee. And Prabhupada's, you know, point was, what do you mean they're not becoming devotee? They're hearing Krishna book and taking prasad. That's not devotee. You know, so there was things, you know, they're not shaving up, moving in the temple, and things like that. So you know, it's fine. But if you do that from amongst that, then you'll catch some. So that's the whole point, is that it's not that if it's not, you know, so serious, then it's a waste of time. Or no, we don't want to push, and no, we don't have to say someone should be serious. The point is how the individual, if we're talking individuality, then it means that person who can be serious, he should be serious. And the person who can't be serious, then they're not. So this whole idea, it has to be this or that, that's the problem. The point is everyone according to their capacity. Right? So, does that make sense?
Yeah. But it depends on their material nature, or it depends on that they just made so much advantage?
It's nothing to do with their material nature.
Yeah.
Like that. Material nature is dead matter. So it's their consciousness. It's just what does the soul, how much are they frustrated with the material world? Seriously, or just a little bit? You know what I'm saying? So that's why you see, that's why it says the arta, artarti, and jigyasu, unless they come to the platform of a jnani, then there's a good chance they'll go away. You know? Or they'll just kind of stay on that platform like that and not move forward. But if you want to get to the Madhyamika platform, you have to come to the Jigyasu platform. It means you want to know about the Lord, who He is. Not you're just interested in, okay, spiritual subject matter. Sounds interesting, you know. Does that make sense? You know, read Tolkien, read Kafka, now, you know, hey, now let's read Gita, you know. Does that make sense?
So the main point about sense gratification here is that you shouldn't be stagnant, you should preach?
Yes, you shouldn't be stagnant, it should be dynamic, it should be more moving forward. Because they'll be sitting and enjoying the Lord's company, and like that, but then they can do so much more. Because you also have the thing you see before, is that Ramachandra is there, Lord Chaitanya is there, Krishna is there, but they're tasting also that aspect of separation. So then you're out preaching, so yes, you're not there, but at the same time, it's because you're doing things on behalf of the Lord, then there'll be a taste in that. The Lord is there, the Lord is taking care, but it'll have that different flavor. So, yes?
We have an interesting phenomenon. Those who are unqualified to preach, very eager to do that.
Yes.
Those who are qualified, sometimes they're just, you know, reluctant to do it. So why is that happening?
It's also just when Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains just how one approaches the devotional process, the first position one's in, not Shraddha to Prema, just the first position one's in is enthusiasm. So you want to do. Then the next one that comes after that is sometimes you're enthusiastic, sometimes you're not. Then the third stage coming to is then means you're kind of using the religious systems to, I say, rationalize your involvement in your particular lifestyle and that it's okay and not moving forward to a more advanced religious position. Right? That means that's what we were talking about before. Like that. That's why I was saying it's not. It's a bona fide position, but it's the third position. You're trying to get past the sixth, right? Then the fourth position. Then it will be, okay. I'm going to get serious. Going to be determined here. Then the fifth position is that one is determined. One is fixed, but one's not always successful. And then the sixth position, one's successful, but one tends to be distracted by the facilities that comes from success. So then actually, to be actually steady in Krishna consciousness, you have to get past that sixth one. Right. So then the problem comes up is just they'll get stuck in between. So without that association, that's what I was saying, is that unless the principle of pure devotion is being constantly preached, and that's the whole point, and showing whatever you're doing, the knowledge of something, the mechanics of something, the application of something, the results of that, all in connection with that, then the tendency is we'll just get sidetracked by what's comfortable. You know, what works, what's comfortable. You don't want to go outside of that. You don't want to take any risk. So the idea is that where someone's willing to take the risk, that's where they're qualified. You know, just like a businessman, he's willing to risk economically. That's why he's qualified to make money. Those who don't want to risk economically, they don't do that. They get jobs. Right? People have a job because every week it pays the same. While a businessman, one week it pays more, one week it pays less. As one businessman said, it's like a dog's dinner. One day you eat fabulous and one day just crumbs. Like that. You know, so but that's their risk. Well, an administrator, he's willing to risk in administration. So in a sense, they just want this pat system that nothing goes wrong, nothing goes like that. That's bureaucrats. That's shudras. They want steady. That's not administration. It's being mistaken as administration, like was mentioned before. The new course for leadership is points from the MBA. MBA are middle managers. They're shudras. They're not leaders. They're shudras. And the fun part is the middle managers, no one likes them. The guys on the top don't like them. They engage them, but they don't like them. And the guys on the bottom, they hate them. So, you know, I'm not sure how that's going to be successful. You know,
it's not.
You know, this is the method by which you can be effective and everyone will hate you. Yes.
But we want to please everybody.
Yeah, but we want to please everybody. But we'll please nobody. It's equal. We're pleasing nobody.
Yes.
Like that. So that way one can complain that, you're pleasing him and not us. No, we're... How you say?
He's pleasing everyone.
Yes. As what was his name? Kushwant Singh, his editorial. With malice for one and all. So he criticized everybody, including himself. So, everyone liked his editorial.
Unbiased.
Yes, unbiased. He would criticize anyone and everyone and everything. So.
Socialized medicine.
Yes.
You get everybody gets medicine for free and you get what you pay for.
Yes. Yes, so... Aspirins abound. It's fun. Medicine's free, but you get what you pay for. Therefore, people get on a bus and go to Canada to get their medicine. Okay. Did we finish this?
Yes.
Okay. Next page. Okay. Pure devotee, therefore, must execute the order of the Lord and must not gratify his senses by remaining stagnant in one place. If he's dynamic in one place, he can do it. But the point is being dynamic. But if we become stagnant, that's a problem. Falsely proud, because then it's, oh, I'm doing okay, I'm doing great. That's what we were saying about that third position.
Rationalizing.
Is we're rationalizing. No, no, but it says, you know, we should be renounced. We should, but at the same time, it says, you know, engaging the senses and the Krishna service and this and that. So we go wavering back and forth on, you know, engaging Maya or renouncing Maya. Like that, you know, like that. And then falsely proud, thinking that because he does not leave Vrindavan but chants in a solitary place, he has become a great devotee. Right? No, it's just you engage yourself according to what you do. You can't go out and preach. You can't relate to it. Then you sit down and chant. That's great, but you shouldn't be proud. It's that this is all we can, you know, in our humble, this is all we can do. Like that. And respect for the preachers who can go out and do things like that. Then that's all right. That's fine. Such a person is to be respected. Those who are Kanista Adhikaris do not preach, but the Lord shows mercy to them also, as he did by staying personally in Ayodhya to give audience to the people in general. Right? So that's the idea. The temple is there. One can visit every day, see the Lord, and everything like that. Even if you can't go out and preach or do things, at least you can go spend time with the Lord, take darshan, take prasad, do some kirtan, associate with devotees, hear some philosophy, like that. Then, just like the residents of Ayodhya, they're there with the Lord, they see him, they're eager to go see, they render service, you know, they do something, they spend time, like that. Therefore, the Lord is merciful to everyone, and he knows how to show his favor to each individual person according to his capacity. So for the Lord, he's in the heart, he knows how to inspire each living entity. So then he, you know, tries to do it. But we should be trying to be inspired, then he can inspire us. Right? As is mentioned in Manu, is that a woman can be protected if she wants to be protected. So we can only be inspired if we want to be inspired. Right? You know, that's just the principle. Okay. Chapter 12. The Dynasty of Kusha, the son of Lord Ramachandra. Pratigya, if one becomes perfect in the practice of yoga, he can live as long as he likes. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes the dynasty of Kusha, the son of Lord Ramachandra. The members of this dynasty are descendants of Sashada, the son of Maharaj Ikshvaku. Following in the genealogical table of Lord Ramachandra's dynasty, Kusha, the Lord's son, was followed consecutively by Atiti, Nishada, Nabha, Pundarika, Kshemadhanva, Devanika, Aniha, Pariyatra, Balastala, Vajranabha, Saghana, and Vidriti. These personalities ruled the world. From Vidriti came Hiranyanabha, who later became the disciple of Jaimini and propounded the system of mystic yoga, in which Yajnavalkya was initiated. Following in this dynasty were Pushpa, Durvasanti, Sudarshana, Agnivarna, Sigra, and Maru. Maru attained full perfection in the practice of yoga, and he still lives in the village of Kalapa. Oh, okay. At the end of this age of Kali, he will revive the dynasty of the sun god. So that means there's also another king who's residing, I think, in the same village, and he'll revive the moon dynasty. Like that.
His name? The one who's going to revive the sun dynasty?
Maru. But the other one is also mentioned somewhere, but doesn't look to be here. Next in the dynasty were, right, you have to hang out in the village till the end of Kali Yuga, you know, and something only. You know, eat a lot of rootis that way. You know? Okay. Next in the dynasty were Prasushruta, Sandhi, Amarshana, Mahasvan, Vishwabahu, Prasenajit, Takshaka, and Brihadbala, who was later killed by Abhimanyu. Sugadev Goswami said that all these said that these were all kings who had passed away. The future descendants of Brihadbala will be Brihadrana, Urukriya, Vatsa Vridha, Prativyoma, Banu, Divaka, Sahadeva, Brihadastva, Banuman, Pratikashva, Supratika, Marudeva, Sunakshara, Pushkara, Antariksha, Sutapa, Amitrajit, Brihad Raja, Barhi, Kritanjaya, Ranjanjaya, Sanjaya, Sakya, Sudhodaka, Langala, and Prasenajit, Kshudraka, Ranaka, Surata, and Sumitra. All of them will become kings one after another. Sumitra, coming in this age of Kali, will be the last king in the Ikshvaku dynasty. After him, the dynasty will be extinguished. So that means he mentioned up to his time, all of them had died, right? Except for Maru, who's going to bring the dynasty back to life. But all the others had died. And then all these ones he mentioned, these are going to be the 28 generations into Kali Yuga that the dynasty will last. Then it will be finished. So these kings haven't even appeared yet. But he's mentioning their names.
Right? Maru? So,
no, Maru is the one that will remain.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Everybody else before him and after him, up to, what did he say?
Sumitra.
They've already died.
No.
Brihadbala.
Okay, Brihadbala. Okay.
We are
28 generations, starting 5,000 years ago. So it disappeared a long time ago. Like that. So it didn't even make it to the... So that's why it disappeared, then everything goes into ruin, because now the Vedic culture in its natural form is not being followed like that. So then it's just, it's smaller. And then so-called, then the Western, the Greeks, the Romans come up, and then it all starts happening. But they don't catch it. No, it's already degraded and got down to them. Right. Okay. Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses 1 to 16. The dynasty of Kusha, the son of Lord Ramachandra. Oh, that's it. Holy. Okay.
Just the one.
There were two.
Because this is the one who goes down through Kusha. And Lava must have been the younger brother, so he's the main. Because otherwise, if you do every son and every line and all that, then we would still probably be in the first manu. So, therefore, you're just showing the line, because you have to show how the sun dynasty and the moon dynasty come down. So you only have to take the main line. Sukadeva Goswami said, the son of Ramachandra was Kusha, the son of Kusha was Atiti, the son of Atiti was Nishada, and the son of Nishada was Nabha. The son of Nabha was Pundarika, and from Pundarika came a son named Kshemadhanva. The son of Kshemadhanva was Devanika. Devanika's son was Aniha. Aniha's son was Pariyatra, and Pariyatra's son was Balastala. The son of Balastala was Vajranava, who was said to have been born from the effulgence of the sun god. Footnote 25. Vajranava is born from the rays of the sun. Okay. In case it wasn't clear. Okay. Okay. The son of Vajranava was Sagana, and his son was Vidriti. The son of Vidriti was Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyanabha, who became a disciple of Jaimini and became a great acharya of mystic yoga. It is from Hiranyanabha that the great saint Yajnavalkya learned the highly elevated system of mystic yoga known as Adhyatma Yoga, which can loosen the knots of material attachment in the heart. The son of Hiranyanabha was Pushpa, and the son of Pushpa was Dhruvasandhi. The son of Dhruvasandhi was Sudarshana, whose son was Agni Varana, right? So we see is that when you get into from the Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, they function in the brahminical capacity. So even though he was a king, right, when he retired, then he became, initiated into this line, and he's initiated others. Yajnavalkya is considered a great, personality. So it's only in the Grihastha that therefore then there's more the consideration of the Varna. But in the others, you'll see what's the nature, but you don't really worry about the varna. So, in a sense, you know, so there's no designation as such.
Okay. Can we say in this point that if the devotee does not engage in his varna occupation, he's mainly engaged in preaching, even if he's grihastha, he can still...
Yes, but I'm saying still, but he's preaching, so you can say that's brahminical, like that. Or within that, you can say, okay, he's preaching, but in which kind of capacity? How is he doing that? You know, is it through teaching? Is it through administration? Is it through money? Is it through... You know, because some go out, they collect money for different things, and that, and it's preaching. Like that, or some organize things, or what's the nature of it, who they talk to, who they preach to.
Okay, so naturally those who train people and preach to them personally, those are gravitate towards Brahminical.
Yes, they grab. But the point is as Vaishnavas, everybody can do that, but you might find, you know, you do well, let's say, within the professional circuit in preaching, while someone does well in, let's say, with students or with... you know, does that make sense? So it depends upon that. You can see that there, but the point is they're preaching. So it's just where they're able to preach, then that's where they'll go. But they don't have duties outside of that, you know. So you don't have to worry about what is the particular varna, because they're functioning within the brahminical. You know, so that's what, basically when you're saying the varna ashram system, that's within the grihastha ashram. But most are grihastas, therefore that's the prominent aspect. But otherwise, when you're outside of that, it's just... So brahmachari means brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, and brahmins can all be brahminical. Now, grihastas can be kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. Does that make sense? So that's what we see is what Prabhupada established. That was all brahminical. So 5 out of 8 were established. But since... many weren't feeling satisfied in their engagement, that's why Prabhupada was talking about varnashram, to engage the other 3. Does that make sense? You know, and so then if we do it ourselves on a farm, then you're independent, you don't have to deal with the karmis. But it's not that it can't be established in the city. Is that, yeah. The son of Dhruvasanti was Sudarshana, whose son was Agnivarna. The son of Agnivarna was named Sigra, and his son was Maru. Having achieved perfection in the power of mystic yoga, Maru still lives in a place known as Kalapagrama. At the end of Kali Yuga, he will revive the lost Surya dynasty by begetting a son. Srila Prabhupada comments. At least 5,000 years ago, Srila Sukadeva Goswami ascertained the existence of Maru in Kalapagrama and said that Maru, having achieved a yoga siddha body, would continue to exist until the end of Kali Yuga, which is calculated to continue for 432,000 years. Such is the perfection of mystic power. Right? So that was then. You know, now it's 5,000 years off of this 432,000, is what I said. Such is the perfection of mystic power. By controlling the breath, the perfect yogi can continue his life for as long as he likes. Sometimes we hear from the Vedic literature that some personalities from the Vedic age, such as Vyas and Ashwatthama, are still living. Here we understand that Maru is also still living. We are sometimes surprised that a mortal body can live for such a long time. The explanation of this longevity is given here by the word yoga siddha. When one becomes perfect in the practice of yoga, he can live as long as he likes. The demonstration of some trifling yoga siddha does not constitute perfection. Right. Here's a factual example of perfection. A yoga siddha can live as long as he likes. So some, it doesn't go. The Prabhupada was in Kumbh Mela, he's going around with the devotees. You know, the sannyasis and the, you know, how we move around, the senior men will go. And over on one side, there was these really, really young-looking, like, boys, but, you know, looking very ascetic. You know, just, you know, the clothes and everything like that. Prabhupada pointed them out and pointed out that those are yogis, and, you know, like, some of them are 300, 600 years old and stuff like that. They look like kids. So just, you know, just doing that, you know, it's just, okay, big deal. That's not so important, you know. But you can do something for, you know, attain that connection with the Lord. That's the whole point of yoga. Yes.
Is there
going to say is, Maru is his name?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm wondering if he's just hanging out in the village and taking a breath every 10,000 years or something.
Could I? It doesn't get into detail because by
like
a city,
sitting in samadhi maybe,
he could be sitting in samadhi. He could be doing so many things. But the point is, by yoga city, they can. So it's not just controlling the breath. That's the technique. But you have to have actually this the conscious. Like it gives like Vyasadeva and who is the other person?
Ashwatthama.
Ashwatthama will be the next Vyasadeva in the next Kali Yuga.
So why this Vyasadeva is still living? Why is this Vyasadeva still living? There will be competition.
But he's done his job. Oh, it's Parasara is still alive, and he was the previous one. So, I mean, who do Vyasas hang out with, right? Other Vyasas.
Not so many of them.
Yeah, it's like, yes.
Ordinarily, Vyasadeva is a Shaktivedanta avatar.
Yes.
But in this particular Vyasadeva, he's actually
Vishnu. Yeah, no, he's Vishnumurti. Yes, yes. Like that. Yeah, so no problem. Just want to make sure. Right?
He's an illegitimate son.
No, because the point is by Gandharva, then it's agreed. So you can say it's not illegitimate. Like that. Yeah, but he also maintained a virginity, so you can't say that it's a... Yeah, so that's the point. You can do that, and hey. But we only hear that Parasara has done that, and the sun god. Right, so.
And what about Mary?
That's another thing.
What about the what? I didn't understand.
What about Mary?
Oh, Mary, yeah.
Yeah, so, but no, but we're not talking... Oh, okay, yeah, maybe.
They copied.
Yeah, so it's popular. But the point is that unless you can do it, then things like that,
Vasudeva did it too in the case of the birth of Krishna with Devaki. It was
yes. So, okay, so now we're up to four. So I don't hear the name of anybody that's, has just joined as a freshman at Yale University. So, in other words, they have to follow a different process.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Therefore, then, like Prabhu says, that's illicit.
I'm sorry. It's funny how we put our perceptions on these shastras so heavily, you know what I'm saying?
That's the whole point, is that, is not everybody does that.
Yeah.
Means those that have more of a traditional background, they won't do that, because there's a respect for authority. But this new modern method of thinking, then the first thing to go is authority. You have to break down authority. Then what does that mean? Whatever we speculate about is bona fide. Because if there's authority, I may be talking total nonsense. But if I get rid of authority, then I can talk nonsense, and then everybody will, applaud for, very nice. So that's the first thing to go. So you see is that, let us say there's so many things that happen in society that are totally stupid. They won't be attacked. But if there's any point that there's authority in doing it, it'll be immediately attacked. But if a common person is doing exactly the same, oh, but what to do, that's what they want to do, and this and that, what can he do? They was there, and the girl was there, and, it was difficult, but, we have to understand, and this and that. But if he's the president, then, oh, throw him out. How can he do this? This is nonsense. So it's all about authority. So that's why then when the Shastra says something, that's the basis of authority. So if you can get Shastra, you get authority. And so then in, one fell swoop, then, we become our own authority. So that's why you see the modern way of thinking is you have to attack authority. You have to attack tradition. You have to doubt it. So if you can't beat it, then you just sow doubt. Because then if I can't destroy it with ignorance, at least I can implant some passion where people can't tell. You know, because then if they can't tell while they're, you know, while they're squabbling, then I can come in and take what I want. Like that. Like that. So. Yes?
No, I was just thinking, just to call Vyasadeva an illegitimate son, you know, I'm saying that's planting our perception on Shastra.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But it's there, but there's nine kinds of marriage, so therefore, you know, Shastra, it's one of the kinds.
Right. Yep.
But the point is, because he may, if they had had the child and stayed together, then they're married. But because they could have the child and maintain her virginity, only virgins can get married. Right? So therefore, she's still, marriageable. So therefore, they have a son, but it's not illicit. It's just, it's in another category that we just don't get involved in. Kunti is the same. Kunti is the same. You know, as we mentioned, then we have Mary and we have, but Vasudeva and Devaki, they were all married, so it's not a problem. Yeah, and so we're Mary and, who was the father?
Joseph.
Yeah, so then that's another case. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.